Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Have you been reading the newspapers about Chicago Animal Care and Control? And some of the stories have been critical. You know, I'll talk about this with Charlie Propsom, who is the founder of the Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. It's not the fault of an animal shelter of any facility if they get too many animals in. And they try every which way to find homes for those animals via other animal shelters, via fostering programs, via rescue groups. If they're unsuccessful because there are just too many and not enough people coming into the shelter to adopt, what can they do? You know, the problem is complicated, but launching an attack, I don't know anyone who works in animal welfare who says, hooray, let's euthanize as many animals as we can. I mean, of course not. The goal is not that at all. The goal is to find forever homes for all of them. We'll talk to Charlie Propsom about that. Dr. Renee Schmidt is the senior veterinary toxicologist at the Pet Poison Helpline. Help! People, that's what they cry out for, right? That's what you're there for. What is the Pet Poison Helpline?
Absolutely. So we are a 24/7 animal poison control center. We never close. We're always open. We are here to help pet owners as well as veterinary professionals to determine if something that an animal got into that they shouldn't have, if it's going to be toxic to them. If it is, then we help guide the pet owner or the veterinarian into the treatment recommendations, what signs may be seen. We're really here to be that trusted resource in veterinary toxicology for pet owners and veterinary professionals.
And it is a broad topic.
It
truly is. So let's talk about the fact that eventually it is getting warmer in Chicago, right?
Yes,
and
finally.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And as that happens, people are out barbecuing. Corn on the cob. Dogs like that.
Yeah, corn on the cob, fortunately, is not going to be a big toxic concern, but we can definitely have a foreign body issue.
Right. So what if they eat the cob?
The cob itself,
yeah,
it just doesn't digest well. And so it typically causes a foreign body issue. Sometimes they end up having to have surgery to have that taken out.
Yeah, and that's not good.
No, at all. Not good at all. And some of our bigger concerns when we're talking about barbecuing or having those kind of parties would be onions for sure for dogs. If they were to get into onions that were put on the burger, or maybe there's onion dip that's out, onions can cause breakdown of red blood cells and a destruction of that, and so it can be very life-threatening to them.
Okay, let's go inside the house. Now we're spring cleaning, right?
Yeah.
And in the process of doing so, I want to ask you about rodenticides and other types of poisonings, like even for cockroaches or for ants, those sorts of things.
Yeah, you bet. So rodenticides, we're talking mainly about mouse and rat baits. And those are things that, depending on what the active ingredient is, can have a very narrow margin of safety in dogs and cats alike. And with these guys, depending on that active ingredient, they can have bleeding issues, they could have brain swelling, they could have high calcium levels that result in kidney failure. So definitely not something to allow any type of access to your pets with.
How important, if you think your dog has ingested some of that, is it to take a picture of the product itself? Because I think from what my limited knowledge is, those products vary a great deal.
Yes, absolutely. Knowing what that active ingredient is. So I encourage everyone who uses rodenticides in their household to at least take a picture of the front and back of that packaging if they don't save it, or save the receipt that shows specifically what it is, so that we can know what that active ingredient is, because the signs or the symptoms that these pets develop is very different and their treatment is extremely different as well.
What about ant or cockroach baits? Do pets actually get into those?
Oh, yeah. You know, they do, because there's a food substance, a food source that's there. And so it's very enticing. It smells good and they want to chew on it and taste it. And animals are inquisitive. And so they explore with their mouths. And fortunately, it would take a pretty highly concentrated ant or roach bait to be problematic for them.
What about the beautiful flowers that we bring in for Easter and for some other, just because we like beautiful flowers?
Yeah, you bet. So the big one that I get concerned about is going to be lilies. And those are lilies of the Lilium genus and the Hemerocallis genus. So
you kind of have to be an expert on plants.
You do, because a lot of these fresh cut bouquets will have Peruvian lilies in them.
Now, how do I know the difference between, you've rattled off three kinds of lilies. Lilies to me are lilies.
Yeah.
So how does the average person know what is a Peruvian lily?
Yeah, for sure. So the easy thing is to ask your florist, what was in this? What's in this bouquet?
Even then, I mean, the reality is people go to Costco and pick up the flowers or whatever.
For sure.
You don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
But would it be safe to say that, I'm just talking about lilies at the moment, that the kind that are generally sold at stores that smell beautiful for us are, all of those are dangerous, particularly to cats?
Almost.
Okay.
Almost. The larger ones, absolutely. But the Peruvian lilies are also in those bouquets. They look like the larger, like white, brilliant colored lilies that we think about. And then the smaller ones that help fill the bouquets, they're kind of a filler. They look like the lily, only they're about half the size. And those are more of the Peruvian lilies. They have a pointed tip. They miss that. I call it the puffy triangle in the center, or a lot of that pollen is missing as well. And so those are ones that aren't going to be a big issue, but you're absolutely right. As a pet owner, and before I became in the field that I'm in, I didn't know the difference either. And so what we can do at Pet Poison Helpline is pet owners are able to send pictures of that bouquet, and we can identify it for them. Yes, this is a lily of concern, or no, it is not.
Do you have information on your web? Because I could ask you about what other plants are a problem. We would be here for 3 hours.
We would be.
Yeah. So do you have information on your website?
Absolutely. Go to petpoisonhelpline.com, and we have a poisons list, and you can type in different plants and find out if they're an issue or not. We also have a website called nolilliesforkitties.com, which is a campaign that we partner with the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. And we educate pet owners and the general public on which lilies are good, which lilies are bad. And we also offer different alternatives, safer alternatives for having flowers and plants in a pet-loving household.
I love that, because you're not saying don't get any flowers, because that's not.
Absolutely.
That's hard, you know?
Right.
So you're saying just be careful, and here are some things that are safe.
Absolutely. And I always recommend, if you're going to send a bouquet to someone, if you know they have a cat in the household, just ask the florist to make sure no lilies are involved.
What are some other plants? Again, I can't ask you to name all of them. It's too many. But what are some others that are common that you'd be concerned about?
Yeah, so when we're thinking about springtime, and we just kind of probably either are just coming up to St. Patrick's Day or right around there, our lucky shamrocks. So it's not uncommon for us to have shamrocks in the household as a year-round plant. Shamrocks, unfortunately, can cause kidney failure in dogs and cats. And
that's not a lucky charm.
No, it's not a lucky charm at all. Our animals didn't draw the long straw when it came to having shamrock in the house.
And pets are sometimes interested in lunching on those?
Yeah, they can be. And if you haven't seen a shamrock plant, I encourage you to look at it, because their leaves and their stems are not very large. And so the plant is a great size to sit on your windowsill or your table, and then have the cat come up and just start nibbling.
So one thing is to not buy it in the first place, which I'm all for, and I suspect you are too. But another thing is to also give cats alternatives that are safe, such as cat grass.
Yes, cat grass, catnip, depending on the cat. My cat loves catnip, and so we grow catnip for them in the house, and that way it's something that they can go and chew on.
Yeah, our cat had to go to the Betty Ford Center for that, but that's a whole other thing. That's not true. We'll be back with Dr. Renee Schmidt, because I want to talk about foods. And there is a surprising list. You'll be surprised. So you may know about chocolate. I hope you do. If not, you will soon. But you might not know about some of these other things we'll talk about when we come back on WGN. From the Pet Poison Helpline, when you need help, she's there 24 hours. You don't look tired, though.
No, I've got a lot of people surrounding me that helps man the phone lines for sure.
And we'll give this information out one more time, but for now, we'll do it now. What is the website and the phone number?
Yeah, petpoisonhelpline.com, and our phone number is 1-800-213-6680.
And they're 24 hours.
If your pet does ingest something that you think might be problematic, do you call? Do you wait for the pet to say, "Oh, I'm sick," or how do you do that?
Yeah, so I recommend either calling your veterinarian
immediately.
Or Pet Poison Helpline. Either one of us. We're always here. So when your veterinarian is off for the day, we can help take care of your questions as well. But if you wait, there are certain things that these animals that get into that if you wait, it's too late to treat. And so we want to be safe. And with these pets, they're our beloved family members, and we don't want to wait.
I want to talk about why you're sitting on the opposite end of the table, and that is because I had garlic for lunch. And that's good for us, from what I understand. Garlic is healthy for people. But tell me about dogs or cats if they eat it.
Yeah, so unfortunately, garlic is highly toxic to dogs and cats. Cats drew the short straw when it came to garlic because they're even more sensitive than dogs are. And just a small amount for that in a cat can cause a destruction of their red blood cells, and so significant anemia, and can be very life-threatening to them.
So do you find that sometimes people say, okay, I'm going to feed my cat some, I don't know, I made salmon for dinner, but they sprinkle garlic on it.
Yeah.
So people don't know sometimes. Salmon in small amounts, and I be careful how I say this because not true necessarily for every cat, but I think it's safe to say it's actually a good thing for cats in small amounts. It's positive. But now when there's garlic on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where we have to really be concerned with garlic powder, garlic salt, the wet minced garlic. They're so concentrated that even just one teaspoon of garlic powder is about 2 to 3 cloves of garlic. And so it just takes a very small amount to be problematic in a cat.
Yeah, gee whiz, I didn't know that. And something else you might not know about, and even know this word, xylitol.
Yeah.
And you've been way up front to help get the word out about this. I don't know that even veterinarians knew about this 10 years ago.
You're absolutely right. And I always like to preface when we talk about xylitol that it's xylitol with an XYL. It doesn't start with a Z. And we can see it in a lot of what we used to consider sugar-free gums, sugar-free candies, and mints because it's a sugar substitute. And it's great to help people with weight loss or with diabetes and just different health benefits. However, what we're finding now is that it's present in things along with sugar, and it's present in things that don't say sugar-free. And so we really have to look at the back of really anything that tastes good, chewable medications, gummy medications, liquids. We can see xylitol in any of those products as well.
Or baked goods that you're putting in the oven because you want it for you, sugar, and then you're going to give the pet a little bit. Or more often, the pet gets into it, but you don't want the pet to get into it. But boy, that dog countersurfed, and now not only is getting into brownies that are chocolate, but with xylitol on top of everything else. And I want to talk about chocolate in a moment. I'm responsible for doing a bad thing. So I tell people, I have been for years, low-fat, low-salt peanut butter. Stuff it into the toy, and it gives a dog something to do when you're not there. That part is good, right?
Absolutely.
However, some of those, and I talk about this now, but many of those products that have no sugar, those peanut butters and no salts, have xylitol. Well, now you're not doing your dog any favors. In fact, that's quite dangerous.
Absolutely. And what dog lives a good life without peanut butter? And, definitely our dog at home, she has her own peanut butter jar. And all you have to do is just barely make the sound that jar is opening, and she's right there ready for it.
Yeah.
But so far, we have not found any mainstream peanut butter brands to contain xylitol. Never say never, because it can change in any moment. We find that more of the problematic or the concerning ones with xylitol are in the specialty brands. I kind of call them the boutique-y brands. They're kind of off to the side a little bit more. Maybe they're in the Whole Foods section of the grocery store,
right,
or something like that. And so,
but people do purchase those.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you just really, you have to look back at the ingredient label. And as a, as a conscious pet parent, just really making sure that if you're going to give your pet anything to eat that has ingredients to it other than, we're not talking about a banana, we're not talking about a piece of apple, but anything like that, we've got to look in the back and watch for xylitol.
All right. I want to talk about chocolate. Chocolate isn't just chocolate. There are all kinds of chocolate. I don't think any of them are good for our pets.
No, none of them are good for our pets. And any amount of chocolate can cause pancreatitis to develop in pets, whether it's a toxic concern or not. But we get really concerned as the chocolates change based on, I say, how good they taste. If they are sweet, then those are more of the milk chocolates. But as we get into those bitter chocolates, the Baker's chocolate and the unsweetened chocolates, they have a really high content of what we call theobromine, which is the big concern that's there. So a very small amount of those really highly concentrated chocolates can be much more problematic than the milk chocolate.
So particularly the dark and baking chocolates are the problem?
Yeah, your baking chocolate, unsweetened chocolate, bittersweet chocolate chips when you're making that great batch of chocolate chip cookies.
Now I'm getting hungry. However, for our pets, dogs in particular, who are interested in this, that is not a good thing. So if you suspect your dog has had some chocolate or you know it, then do I instantly try to contact my veterinarian, or again, do I wait until the dog seems sick and then make a call?
Yeah, I encourage everyone to contact them right away. The longer that it sits in the stomach, as it gets absorbed, we have that risk of having symptoms developing. Again, even if it's not a toxic concern, pancreatitis can develop.
Well, and that can be life-threatening.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, for
sure. That's an inflammation of the pancreas. And Dr. Renee Schmid, thank you so much. Yeah. Tell me where people find the pet poison hotline, helpline.
Absolutely.
Hold on. Pick it up. Yeah, sorry. Tell me where people can find the Pet Poison Helpline.
Yeah, you can find us at petpoisonhelpline.com or 1-800-213-6680. And we also have are on social media. So join our Instagram page, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Who's not on social media?
Exactly.
Dr. Schmidt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next week on the show, I guarantee, or your money back, a fascinating conversation, because she always is, and likely controversial, with Dr. Robin Downing. She is incredible. She has more letters, I believe, after her name than I certainly have in my name. I mean, every year it seems she goes after, there's a new degree I want over there. There's something I haven't done over there. When it comes to ethics, animal ethics, she is one of the few veterinary ethicists, board certified as well. She's also an expert on pain in our dogs and cats. A lot to speak about with her. There always is. She is incredible. Dr. Robin Downing for the entire program next week, right here on Steve Dale's Pet World, 720 WGN. Animal care and control in Chicago, I would argue, is the forgotten about animal shelter. It's the facility, though, that is the hub of the wheel. It matters the most if you happen to live in the city of Chicago, or even many of the suburbs included. Charlie Propsom is here. She is the president of the Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control, also the founder of that organization. And, you know, I just got to know, Charlie, that we are being overrun. That might not have been the exact word in the press release, but the essence of it is we are being overrun with dogs and cats. First off, is that true? And then secondly, why do you think that is the case?
Hello, Steve. Yes, that is the case. It never ends. Honestly, I've been volunteering with Animal Care and Control since the late 1990s, and people don't understand what goes on there, the burden that they lift from people in the community, and the work, the incredible work that they do. Right now, I've been told that they were getting in 30 to 40 animals a day, and the facility will hold about 400 animals comfortably. This is at 2741 Southwestern. And, but when you get in that many animals every single day, you need people coming in every single day to adopt, or you're in big trouble. So that's the situation.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you put it the way you just put it, because sometimes, not only in Chicago but all over the country, facilities like Animal Care and Control, which is open admission by law, and this is the case for municipal facilities all over the country. It's not only Chicago. And the idea is a good one. I mean, years and years ago, there were stray dogs everywhere, you know, decades and decades ago, not to mention all the stray cats out there and other animals on occasion, if you go back enough years, even farm animals in urban areas, right? And, yeah. And to eliminate that, because that's a health hazard, that's a risk in all sorts of other ways. So decades and decades and decades ago, all over the country, cities said, including Chicago, there's a municipal facility, we'll create it, but by law, any animal that comes to the door has to be accepted. And what you're saying is if there are more, today we're talking primarily dogs and cats, of course, so if there are more dogs and cats that can come in and there's no space anymore, what do you do? Now, the good news is that in recent years, other shelters began to come to Animal Care and Control, that happens every day, and pull animals from Animal Control and take those animals in to their facilities if they have space. They always don't. And the other thing that's happened over the course of years, and a woman by the name of Susan Russell, a director from, I don't know, 8 years ago, I'm guessing, something like that,
began
in a bigger way to say, okay, we've got all these rescue organizations. Let's work with them as well. But even doing all those things, Charlie, what you're saying is we still have more animals coming in than people who are adopting out those animals. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. And I can't tell you how many people I talk to about adopting animals from friends of Animal Care and Control. And when I tell them we have more animals available, there are hundreds of cats to choose from at Animal Care and Control, they go, oh, animal control, where is that? What is that? And like it just seems impossible to me that people still don't know about Animal Care and Control.
Yeah. So this is the most, in some ways, I think, the most important facility. So of all of the animal shelters in Chicago, this is one of the few that accepts animals. So if you have a reason for relinquishing that animal, you don't have a lot of choices necessarily as to where to bring that animal. And most people land at Animal Control. Why are so many people giving up their pets right now? I think it has to do greatly with housing issues. And it's actually as much or more of a dog issue, the way I understand it, than a cat issue. You tell me, you're more in the trenches.
Well, it may seem like there's more issue with dogs than cats, but I will tell you, in this city, if someone dies and they have no one to claim their body or look after their effects and stuff, and people are sent into the, you know, empty apartment, whatever, to straighten things up, often the dogs will go to Animal Care and Control. What happens with the cats sometimes, and this is not infrequent, is that people open the door and figure cats can take care of themselves. So they just open the door and let them loose. And that contributes to more problems, you know.
So, it does.
I would just say cats and dogs need help, and they are getting it from Animal Care and Control. But we need people, adopters, if you will, to step up to the plate and give these animals a home. You know, you can buy from a breeder, you can go online, but hey, you've got this incredible facility there that has beautiful animals, and you know, we need people to come and give those animals homes.
In fact, I had a dog that was from Chicago Animal, she's since passed away, but she was from Chicago Animal Care and Control, and I'm chuckling a bit because I was going to say one of the best dogs I've ever had, but then I could say that about every dog I've ever had. But because in their own way, they are all the best dogs, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a story about this dog and her unique looks, actually. So I got the call from someone I know at Animal Control who said, and this person's no longer there, but who said, I've got a dog. I know you love Australian Shepherds. They look like Aussie mixes. They're all puppies. So puppies were literally, happily, this doesn't happen very much anymore, but puppies were literally dumped in a box at the door. And I said, okay, we'll come in and see them. We had a dog that had recently passed away. So my wife, Robin, and I go in, and of course, and we're looking at puppies. Of course we fall in love. So we chose this puppy with a very unique look, almost like a African wild dog. It looks like her coat was painted on her. Just a gorgeous dog, probably no Australian Shepherd in this dog whatsoever. So we take her to the park, and she's playing with another dog. And the woman says, whose dog the other dog is, and says, you know, I've got a puggle here. And she was promoting the fact that she paid, I don't know, $3,000, whatever it was at the time. I paid $3,000 for this puggle. Tell me about your special breed. So I said, I've got and Chicagoans will understand this, a King Daly Shepherd. I made that up, of course. You know, there is no such thing. But I'm in Chicago. Sure there is. And it cost me $50 or whatever the adoption fee was at the time from Animal Control. And she was like horrified. But she said, oh, I've got to look into this special breed. They are special dogs, especially the Chicago dogs. At Chicago Animal Care and Control, when we come back, we'll talk about that. And Charlie will reveal how inexpensive it can be to adopt from Chicago Animal Care and Control. So if you're cheap, you've got to listen to what she has to say. That's next on WGN. Charlie Propsom is the president of Chicago Animal Care and Control. And we're kind of having fun here, but there's nothing fun. And what we're talking about, it's life and death, because when there are too many dogs at the facility, Charlie, what does the facility do? They, as I talked about, they reach out to other shelters. That's done every single day. Shelters now voluntarily, for years, have been coming into Animal Control every single day. But they don't always have space in their own facilities. Fostering. That's something I didn't mention before and should have. That's kind of a secret sauce. So if you can foster, that would be wonderful because that frees up space at Animal Control. What's more, that dog or cat is in a real household. And no matter how great any shelter is anywhere, they're not a real home. Also, foster families get a feel. Okay, this dog really isn't great with kids, or this dog loves children, or whatever that temperament is for that dog and can help. They begin to work on house training issues, for example, with dogs. Make sure the cats are using the litter box, all those things. So that's huge. But when there are no more foster families, there's no more rescue organizations, and shelters are filled everywhere, the truth is, Animal Control has to do what they have to do. And then they get criticized for it, Charlie. And the criticism to me, I don't know anyone who works in animal welfare that wants to see animals euthanized, period, especially animals that don't need to be euthanized except there's no homes for them. And the truth is, the issue is on the other side. It's not the animal's fault. It's not the shelter worker's fault or the municipal facility's fault. If fault is the right word, and it likely isn't, because this problem is more complex than just laying blame, but it's the animals being there in the first place, which is rarely their fault. Am I making any sense to you with all this?
Oh, yes, absolutely, Steve. I know the story well, and it is up to each one of us to do what we can to place these animals, and it's, you know, you can talk about theoretical things and what we should be doing and all the rest of that, but what it comes down to is hard, cold facts, individual citizens adopting animals. That's where the solution lies. And yes, we can make all kinds of rules. We can, you know, create more housing, build more shelters, be no-kill. We can do all this stuff, which is all good. But when it comes down to it, damn, you know, people have to go and adopt these abandoned animals.
Yeah.
Until that happens on a grand scale, we don't have a solution to the problem.
Totally agree with you. And on top of everything else, the municipal facilities, so private facilities get a lot of funding or get a little funding, depending on how lucky they are or are not, as far as raising money. But Chicago Animal Care and Control has always been dependent on Chicago's budget until Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control came along. Can you explain what Friends is?
Sure. I started volunteering in the late 1990s with Animal Care and Control because I realized how miserable conditions were. And, a bunch of things happened that got me involved. And a couple years later, there was an improvement in people's interest in Animal Care and Control. They wanted to help, but, who are these guys? And how do I give them money? And, I mean, we had donors coming up with wanting to give a check for $10,000. What I learned at that point was that donations like that go into the city's coffers, and they plan their budget for the whole city, and that money gets used where it's needed most. And unless you have an advocate in that budget process for Animal Care and Control, they ain't seeing a dime.
Yeah.
So what we did was form Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control. That way people could give to our organization, and we could purchase what the shelter needed to, you know, step up to the problems. And we ended up financing positions. At one point, they were going to close the shelter on, I believe it was Sundays and Mondays, and not make it available to the public during that time. And they lacked front desk help. So we ended up financing a front desk position for the city. We gave the city money to pay the salary to do that position, and that kept the doors open for 2 days, you know, every week. So it's kind of unique. They wanted to give each one of the animals a blanket at one point. They couldn't do it because they didn't have washing machines to clean them. And so we bought industrial-sized washing machines and dryers, and I believe we're on our third set of those now.
Yeah.
Mighty expensive things, like $15,000 at a crack. So, but thanks to donors, to Friends, we were able to provide the shelter with some of those kinds of things.
And now
medical equipment and other stuff as
well. So now what you're doing is more medically oriented. Let's talk about where Animal Control is, knowing that people can go there in person. You can go there online also. But in addition to that, greatly, the adoptions are, well, how much money does it cost now to adopt?
You know, I should have looked this up during our break, but I believe they're $65 per animal, if I'm not mistaken. It hasn't changed in 30 years. So,
yeah.
If you saw previous advertising for it, that's still the fee that's charged. And it's our wonderful aldermen that won't let that be raised. They want animals accessible for everybody in the community.
And they most certainly are at that price. I mean, gee whiz, a bag of dog food these days costs more just about.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So please, please consider adoption. Chicago Animal Care and Control is where?
They are at 2741 Southwestern Avenue. It's easy to get to from almost anywhere in the city. It's set back from the road, so you do have to look for the signage and stuff. But once you get to 28th Street, you just take an east turn off Western Avenue, and you're right there. They've got a big parking lot. And they are actually working on a remodeling project right now. But there, you still have access to the shelter and looking at the animals. They're open from noon to 7 p.m., but get there by 6 p.m. every day.
Yeah.
And that's 7 days a week.
All right, so. Charlie, thank you so much. I'm just trying to help get the word out as well. From Chicago Animal Care and Control, the Friends of Chicago Animal Care and Control, thank you for all the work you've been doing for a very long time. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Steve.
So once again, it happens every time at this year. I've been reporting on this for as long as I've been on the air. So 27, 28 years here on WGN Radio about the most popular dog breed in America. That's what the American Kennel Club says about their number one breed. And that might have been the case 27, 28 years ago. Today, not so much. I mean, first of all, the majority of dogs in America today are mixed breed dogs. Probably a dog you'd look at and say, that dog's a pit bull. In Chicago, we call them Chicago dogs, right? They've got these broad shoulders, a big head. Truth is, they're mixed breed dogs is all. Or maybe the designer dogs, like a Labradoodle or a Yorkie Poo or something like that. They are very popular as well. Overall, mixed breed dogs are number one on the list. But the American Kennel Club is interested in purebred dogs. The other thing that makes this list not as credible as it once was. So back in the day, most dogs were purebred dogs, 27, 26, 28 years ago. However, today, not the case. But what's more, most people who have a purebred dog don't register their dog. So there's no way the AKC can track that. Having said that, it is still always interested in some level of feeling of how popular individual breeds are. So for 31 years, Labrador was number one. French Bulldog last year took over that place. And French Bulldogs actually remain number one on the list, which is good news and bad news for French Bulldogs. It means they cost more than ever because they are number one on the list. And because they cost more than ever, their value has increased, and they get stolen more than any other breed. In any case, number two on the list is the Labrador Retriever. The third most popular breed are the Golden Retrievers, followed by the German Shepherd Dog, and then all variations of the Poodle, Toy Miniature, and Standard at number five. More at AKC.org. See you bright and early next week here on WGN.